Heyo, and here we go. Welcome to We Talk Comics, episode number 57. This one subtitled Revenge of the Reviewer. And that's because this week we have a very special guest, but I'll get to him in just a moment. First off, we're going to go around the room. I am Mo. Welcome. And we have, of course, with us Brett. Brett, how are you doing?
I'm all right so far.
So far?
So far.
You make it sound like I'm going to ruin your night.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Oh, it probably wouldn't be. And Chris is with us.
I'm here. No funny thing? Come on.
I don't have time for that.
I want to hear Matt's answer on some bizarre question you asked.
Nobody knows who Matt is yet. And we spent the first 20 minutes waiting for your technology to get going here. We haven't got time for anything else. Keith, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mo. It's good to be back with a crowd of people as opposed to talking to my own picture and my own reflection in my monitor.
Yes, the band is back together, and in fact, the band has added one extra person because we do have somebody in for this show, Matt Santori Griffin of Comicosity.
Griffith?
Is it Griffith or is it Griffin?
It's Griffin.
He was so close, too.
Yeah. You got the Santori right.
Can you change it? Can you literally change it for me? Matt Santori Griffin of Comicosity, co-owner now and senior editor, correct?
Correct. Thank you. Correct.
Yes, no problem. At least I got that part right. And Matt's here because he wants to talk a little bit about some of the issues that we talked about in a couple shows ago. So we'll get to him in a moment. But first off, of course, we're still going to open up with our favorite section, at least our favorite section when the news is interesting. That is the weekly news with Cub Reporter K. Now, that's, of course, sponsored by Matt's website, the very fine and gracious Comicosity, co-run with your co-owner, I guess, the classiest man at comics, Aaron Long. So, Matt, why don't you just tell everybody what Comicosity is and why they should go visit it?
All right. Well, Comicosity is, as you guys always say, and we're extremely grateful for it, the best place to go get your comic news. You know, we put up news, reviews, previews, special features, done by some people actually on this very podcast. So, you know, we really are very grateful for all the people who have found Comicosity, and of course for you guys for talking it up every week. And yeah, that's the place to be.
So don't be a geek. Go to Comicosity and proudly be a comic book geek.
That is exactly right, though.
That's exactly right. All right, now it's time for the weekly news with Cub Reporter K. Go ahead, Keith.
All right, well, we haven't done news in a while, so there's a lot of catch-up to do. We'll hit the highlights of our time off and some of the newer stuff. So, a lot of very mixed reactions to the announcement that DC will set their personal record for most variant covers. 52.
Brett has an opinion.
There will be 52, actually there'll be 53 because there's a generic cover, 53 covers to the Justice League of America number one. There will be one for every state, there will be one for Puerto Rico, and there'll be one for Washington, D.C., plus a generic cover.
Which is for Canada.
So there is no Canadian cover. There's no international cover. I guess, as I said, we had our shot with Justice League International. We didn't make a go of it, so we get screwed on this.
I blame Booster Gold.
I blame Alpha Flight.
Booster can take it.
Brett, you have an opinion on variant covers. I know you do.
I just think it's funny. I mean, it's just one of those crazy things that you're almost pulling out of the woodwork, this variant cover craziness. And I don't understand it, but, you know, it's crazy. Right. Matt, go ahead.
You know, it's funny because I'd be a lot more excited if the covers were, you know, a little more interesting. I'm hoping that what they're showing are sort of just the prelims. But the good news about these covers is that they're not retailer incentives, so they for the retailer, they can order one, they can order two at the same, I believe, the same price as the other. All they have to do is order it. So there's no massive up order they have to do. But, you know, there's also probably not that much speculator interest then, of course. So
I think it's actually difficult. Go ahead, Matt. No, it's just your turn, please. Go ahead.
Okay. Personally, I would go for the Canadian flag if it was me, but because the Illinois flag's pretty awful.
I actually think that something like this is actually very difficult for a retailer to know what to do. Do you bring in all 52? How many copies do you bring in? Is it good for the retailer? Is it bad for the retailer? Could they get stuck with a lot of books that really they can't sell on their shelves because they're trying to fill it out? I mean, what happens here?
Yeah, if I was a retailer, I'd probably just do pre-orders and just leave it at that and then just get a ton of the single cover. Because it's, I mean, they're not drawn by different artists. Unless someone comes in and wants to order all 52, which I guess could happen, but...
There is a cut rate. There is a pack if you want to buy the pack of 52.
So there you go, Chris.
Something like $150. Like, I think you actually do save money if you...
Yeah, there you go, Chris. You're good to go.
I cut. I'm not interested.
Does it form a giant map of the U.S.? If so, that would be awesome.
I'd put that on my wall.
Are the individual issues scaled to the size of the state?
Can you get a little tiny
Rhode Island comic?
Are the red state issues the ones that are going to be canceled?
Yeah. They're gonna take their wares and go over to Marvel.
There you go. Any other opinions out there?
My actual recommendation for retailers will be do the other states pre-order, get a ton of your own state, and sell them all summer to tourists.
Eh, not bad.
Tourists in a comic store.
Yeah. Brett just summed up the flaw in your plan, actually, yeah.
I go to a comic store every time I visit a city. So
yes.
If you guys ever got out of the city and traveled.
Well, the problem with getting out of the city, like, Keith, is in order to do that, I'd have to get up off my couch. And that's, you know.
Where's the Moe's couch variant?
That'd be a hot seller right there.
I mean, I may be in the Olympics this coming year. I'm pretty damn good at the 100-meter sit. That's pretty good.
So they have said that they know that this is probably over the line for variants. There's been some talk that they'll be scaling back the variant program following this. They got a bit of flack.
The question is, what is Boom going to do to counter it? How is Boom going to go, you know what, we got to take that record back?
3 digits.
IDW still holds the record.
Oh, do they?
With Mars Attacks, 55 covers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got to hit 100. You know. Actually, no, we needed a variant cover for every person who buys it.
Which was 55 copies of Mars Attacks.
Well, sure it was.
It's just got a blank space in the corner that you sign your name, and it, it becomes the Keith incentive cover.
Nice. No, we already have those covers. Those are the blank covers that you're supposed to draw your own picture on.
Oh, man. But, you know what? If you're going to give me this 52 covers, I'd rather you just gave me like 5 really cool hologram covers or something.
Yeah, I mean,
Bring that back.
It is what I thought it would be. I mean, like all of the talk of we have to collect all these covers, my expectation would be it would be like the retailer variants that, you know, like they made, like the Spider Island one that plugged in the Spider-Man saves whatever local comic shop, and you know there was the Godzilla cover that had Godzilla smashing a comic shop. That's all expected, and then you know that's what it ends up being, of course, with just the flag being the variation. All right, well, more DC news. Paul Levitz and Keith Giffen will be reuniting on Legion of Superheroes. This starts at issue 17, February, with Giffen doing art. And I'm quite excited to see Giffen back on Legion of Superheroes. I might actually give it another try. It's been a while since I've said the words interested and Legion of Superheroes in the same
sentence. Yeah, yeah.
What happened to Tom and Mary Beerbohm?
What did happen to Tom and Mary Beerbohm?
I don't know, actually.
One of those great moments where we have to go research during the episode. Okay.
We don't need to research.
Any comments on this? I know Matt actually is a fan of the same era of Legion of Superheroes that I am.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, I've been getting all those issues on Comixology every week. They've been popping up. So, and that's the 5 years later series that Giffen and the Beerbohms ran. Really, like, I know it's not super popular. It sort of took the characters and ripped them apart a bit, but I thought the like smaller cast, the sort of apocalyptic future, it really set it apart from what it had been for so long. But I am very excited for Giffen to come back. I actually, and many people I know on Twitter will be very disappointed to hear me say this out loud, but I actually dropped the book a few months ago. I couldn't do it anymore. But this will bring me back. I will come back and pick it up in print even.
Now, was this the era that Lobo was introduced?
He was in Legion, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was coming out at the same time as the 5 years later. Yeah, Legion. Well, they started Legion 90. 89 or 90 was the first year. And then eventually they dropped the year.
Because I've read those issues, but yeah, that was a weird-ass Lobo.
Yeah, that is not the same Lobo we've come to know and not love.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of cancellations from DC that have been met with some chagrin. Young Justice is being canceled with issue 25, which is February. A lot of concern that may bode poorly for the cartoon. From Vertigo, Hellblazer has been canceled at issue 300. They will be launching sometime around March, probably, a Constantine title from New 52. Hellblazer was the highest numbered comic. Actually, next month, once the Marvel titles end, it'll be the highest numbered title for Marvel or DC.
Well, we can't have that.
Yeah, once the Marvel Now stuff ends, that would have left just Hellblazer. So Hellblazer ended issue 300.
And that movie just really rocks, so we want to capitalize on the name. Why the hell?
Actually, you know what? I got to say what you will. It is... it probably is a better name for branding the character and going forward, Chris.
You know what?
And that's what they're attempting to do.
I would be on board if they named the comic book John Constantine. But just using his last name, I can't get behind that.
I disagree, because nobody calls him John Constantine. They just call him Constantine. So, I mean, let's go. We're 1-1. We got three more people to vote. Good move, bad move, Matt.
I read Hellblazer right now, but I'm only one of about 9,000 people, unfortunately, and so I totally understand why DC would scuffle that in favor of a book spinning out of at least something that's selling about three times as many copies, and is going to be tied into their big annual event. I'm pretty optimistic about it, though. I mean, Constantine started in the DC universe, so coming back it's not like they're taking him back somewhere where he hasn't been before.
Keith?
I would say it's terrible, and I haven't read it in like 200 issues, so what the hell am I to say? I thought it was interesting the amount of people that had a freak out, which of course, as Matt said, the book was only selling about 9,000 copies, so where were you? But the writers that they were talking about, Warren Ellis and Garth Ennis, I'm like, those guys haven't written it in 10 years. You're nostalgic for something that you haven't you haven't paid attention to.
Who's to say we aren't going to get a good? Who's going to be writing it now? Who's going to be taking care of the character?
We are getting Robert Venditti, who was writing, who was also writing Exo Manowar.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it was only selling 9,000 copies, but wasn't DC really making their money on that in the trades?
The trades do still, I did look that up. The trades have been doing pretty well, fairly consistent. But, I mean, it's also a lot of trades to keep in print.
And can you think of?
I don't
can
know.
Can you think of
whether,
one reason why those trades shouldn't continue to sell? Why trades with Warren Ellis and wouldn't continue to sell regardless?
Imagine they would. I mean, I think the biggest problem with the character is that it actually was strange to me that they didn't cancel it a year ago. It's the only DC property left at Vertigo. I thought it was odd that they didn't roll it in, when they relaunched. So it wasn't a huge surprise to me that they finally put the trigger on that.
I, haven't really thought about the title in 10-odd years. Really 100-odd issues. So, I mean, doesn't matter to me one way or the other. Really, if anything, this will make me read it again for one or two shots.
Exactly. So, Chris, you're wrong.
I'm used to it by now.
But I don't care if it's named Constantine or John Constantine. Really. Anything.
I guess named John Constantine. I just can't remember it. It's a little more, just too much.
Yeah, the longer the name, the worse off you are, Mo.
Worse off I am. Well, look what I did with Matt's name.
I know. I take responsibility.
I will defend Mo that he has always got the Matt part right.
Yes.
Well, you weren't around for those couple issues or those couple episodes, so anyways, all right. What else we got here?
We have a new date for the Dexter miniseries from Marvel, which is written by Jeff Lindsay, the creator of the character who writes the novels. This will be coming to us in February of 2013 with art by, there's no way this is going to work out for me, Dalibor Halajic, and I just seconds ago had what the last thing he worked on. But Dexter's a 5-issue miniseries, which is, from everything we've heard, more based on the novels than the TV
now,
series.
One more time, just what was the name of the artist?
That would be Dalibor Halajic.
Well, I'm pretty sure you just butchered the man's name, and I know I'm personally offended you would do such a thing.
I know that we try to maintain a much higher level of accuracy, particularly with names. No,
we ask the internet.
You're horrible.
Well, Brett's the guy always gets the names right.
Except when I get them wrong. But.
All right, well, before we get to the opinion section of the news, this coming Sunday, as we record this, is the 18th of November, 2012. The 18th of November is the 20th anniversary of the death of Superman.
Oh.
Where were you when Superman died? I was in a comic store. But I was working in that comic store. It was the first week I had started. I was literally working for back issue credit.
I'll tell you exactly where I was, because Brett and I maintained a file together. We bought them, then Brett took that issue home, and I was on my bed, by my phone, waiting for him to tell me he had finished it so I could come over and read it. So I could come get it, come bring it home and read it.
I have no idea where I was. Didn't you guys own the store?
This predated before we owned our own store, and you were our file by just a little bit. But you know what, Chris? Come to think of it, let's be honest. You can't remember what you did this morning. So what are you going to... No?
Yeah, we're not going there.
Chris likes to drink, Matt.
Yeah, oh yeah. I never would have gotten that. yeah, I for the life of me can't remember reading that issue. I remember reading the Justice League issues, and I know, I mean, I had it, but I don't remember that in particular.
Really? You don't remember that moment when you turned the page and there was Superman lying in Lois's arms? No. I mean, that hit me like a hammer, even though I knew it was coming.
But I wasn't reading the book. That's the thing.
You didn't wear the armband?
No, I did not wear the armband.
I wasn't reading the book prior to that either, but he was still Superman.
Yeah. I mean, I bought it. I definitely bought it.
You just bought it so you could make money.
Any comic collector bought the damn thing.
Yeah, because today my collection is worth, dozens of
$75.
It's worth more in kindling than it is in money.
When the apocalypse comes and we need heat, it turns out those Tyvek things just burn like a mother.
No question. 7-Eleven. I remember hitting every 7-Eleven trying to get the non-direct market copy because I figured that would be the valuable one.
And how'd that work out for you? How'd that work out for you?
As well as anybody else who bought Superman expecting to make a dime.
I'm pretty sure somewhere right beside the pile of buried Atari ET game cartridges is a pile of Superman number 75. Some dump somewhere. All right.
Last question here. Have you guys encountered anyone who thinks Superman is still dead?
No, but I have encountered people who think that book is still valuable. That's true.
I had someone fairly recently reference, well, Superman died, didn't he? I'm like, wow, really? He was dead for like 3 months. And the gap in there's been a story or two of Superman.
They must have missed the Fox News report that he came back to life.
That's right. Well, that would have sounded a lot like a retraction. All right, well...
Took me a second, but I got it. That would never happen from Fox News. I gotcha. Yeah.
So Tony Harris. Tony Harris on his Facebook. It's a long post. I'm not going to read it all. Basically, Tony Harris kind of went off on... Now, Tony Harris is artist of Starman, artist of Ex Machina, and what's the one he was just doing recently? He had a new creator-owned book.
That I couldn't tell you, but I do know he's been in the industry for a couple decades.
He is behind the JSA series that's coming out, the Liberty Files. That's, I think it's featuring a creator-owned character, too, the Whistling Skull.
So...
I'm sure there's a joke to be made there.
There's a joke about the Whistling Skull. It's a self-portrait of a man without a brain.
So you can take a look at Bleeding Cool for the whole content. Essentially, Tony went off on pretty women who dress up in costumes to get attention of virgin nerds. I think virgin nerds is actually one of his phrases, not one that I put in his mouth, at conventions. You are what I refer to as con hot. You wouldn't be pretty in the regular world, in the real world, but at a convention, because you are being compared to the average in the room, you go up 2 points.
Wow.
Quasi pretty, not hot girl. You are more pathetic than the real nerds who you secretly think are really pathetic, but we are on to you.
Who broke this man's heart this week? Wow. Oh, all right, Brett, you first.
Well, I mean, just speaking from a person who has met and dealt with cosplayers and female ones at that, I think the number one thing that I don't understand is when people just automatically assume that cosplayers dress up, go to a convention, get their kicks, and then walk out without actually buying anything is completely false. Anyways, I have seen cosplayers who buy more at conventions than I do. These are people that, sure, they take the first three quarters of their day and they wander around and gather in the attention, and then they spend their last quarter of the day going to every single table and buying whatever the hell they can carry. I mean, I've literally seen people with, like, huge, giant armfuls of toys and stuff. Maybe they're not buying stuff from Tony Harris, and that's the problem.
Chris?
Who cares? He's an artist. These people are morons a lot of the time. He draws pretty, and that's what I like about him. I'm not going to him for politics or anything else. I mean, they're all crackpots. It's like asking the drummer what...
Chris, there's the shovel. I wish this was a video podcast. Chris, I'm cutting you off now.
No. I mean, it's like asking the drummer his opinion. You don't do it.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. The bassist has never been the star of the band, has he?
Yeah, actually, having spoken to some drummers, you know, in my time, yeah, actually, he's kind of right.
All right, Keith, save us.
There's a great line in Backbeat where Pete Best's character says, "You know why no one ever asks anything? You ever hear anything from the drummer? So no one fucking listens." I think Brett's put his finger on something.
Hold on. How long has it been since we had an F-bomb on this show?
It's been a while.
It's been a long time.
I'm here now, so, you know, it's going to be...
It could happen. These guys have really reined me in. Anyways, Keith, go on.
Well, Matt can say anything he likes, because I only worry about getting in trouble with the sponsor. I think that Brett's put his finger on something. I mean, it from your outside perspective, you see the people in costume. They never have any. They're never buying anything. They're never shopping. They're only getting their picture taken. What you do not see is them leaving after an hour, changing into civilian clothes, and spending the entire rest of the day digging through bins. The 1 hour that you've seen from your perspective is their entire existence. You know. When they when the girl changes out of the Scarlet Witch costume, when you were that you've been staring at for an hour, and comes back in, you know, gym pants and a t-shirt, to dig through the back issue bins and the toy bins, you haven't. She's now the quasi. She's no longer the quasi hot girl. I think if you turn up at a show and you're there to have fun, you don't have to justify yourself to anyone. You can go to a lot of bars and get attention. You don't have to go to a comic convention would be a strange place to go if all you were interested in is attention.
Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really hits the nail on the head, is that, I mean, it doesn't even matter what they spend half their time doing or full time. I mean, this is something I've never really understood about, you know, fans who criticize people for wearing comic book t-shirts if they don't read comic books and liking the movies but not ever reading the original books. And like, well, what difference does it make? You know, the thing about all this stuff is that the more people who see it, who do it, who buy it, the more things there will be to buy. You know, it's self-perpetuating. It's like putting a meme out into the world. And, you know, the more people who consume it, the more of it there'll be to consume later on. The undercurrent of sexism was just way too much. And I know he came back and said, oh, he's talking about guys too. But really, I mean, he pointed out, you know, women in particular, in an industry where women are already looked down upon and talked about as if they're a significant minority, when every show I've been to has had, you know, 40, maybe even 50% women standing in line, getting the same autographs I am, buying the same stuff, pushing me over. You know, they're there as much as everybody else, and whether they're big fans or little fans or not at all.
And Matt, I've also been beat up by a lot of women in my day, so I understand. understand. At conventions and other places, playgrounds, you know.
And, you know, I don't have a whole lot of perspective on this, but I just find it so hard to believe that the straight guys who go to conventions would be that offended by any women, much less pseudo hot women.
Somebody wants to say, who's trying to speak over there?
No, I think Mo, you're about to talk about what I was going to talk about. So I think you go.
I remember here in the Calgary convention, there was a very attractive lady in a C-3PO costume, and I was talking to her, and it was great. And she walked away. I turned to Keith and I said, "Oh my God, where was she 15 years ago?" And Keith said, "Kindergarten." And I thought that was. And that kind of shocked me back into reality. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm an old fat guy now. but nevertheless, no. I mean, who has the right to, like I say, who has the right to judge anybody else? If it's not affecting your life, who cares? It's not affecting your life. You can go to a convention. If you're there to buy books, if you're there to get autographs, if you're there to get sketches, you can do all of that, and these people don't matter. So who gives a damn? That's what I have to say. Just live your own life and enjoy your own life and don't judge others. That's it. Anybody? Keith, what were you going
to
say?
I think the young lady we were talking to at the convention, yes, she was there in costume, and we were making conversation and said, you know, do you actually read any comics? If the answer was no, the answer was no. But she told us she read Dark Knight.
Yes.
And read Dark Knight specifically because of the movie. Because the movie had the same name as that comic. That's why she read Dark Knight.
And then remember, we were talking a little bit of Star Wars, and I said, you're dressed like C-3PO, and she said she can't do the voice, but she can do a Chewbacca voice and did the little growl thing. It's like, this is, you know, who cares? Everybody has a right to have fun, and you don't have a right to impede other people's fun or to judge it.
Now, where did Tony Harris put this out again?
His Facebook.
Yeah, I think we're giving it way too much attention for a Facebook post. Who cares? I mean, people talk all sorts of shit on Facebook.
Chris, we got a podcast to fill. You're missing. Go ahead, Matt.
And I put this call out yesterday on Twitter, but I haven't gotten much response yet. But if there are any cosplayers listening, male, female, any level of interest, and you want to share photos, thoughts about cosplay, why you love it, send them to me at Comicosity, and I'll put them up in a feature.
Cool. All right. Got anything else there, Keith?
And that's the news.
Awesome. All right. Well, Matt, now we throw to you, because I think you wanted to present Comicosity and your personal side of some of the things we talked about in our episode 55 a couple weeks ago there, reviewing the reviewers. So the floor is yours, my friend.
All right. Well, thanks. And again, thanks for having me on, guys. You know, listening to...
I know I pissed you off by having the conversation without you.
Well, you know, I think what it was going through sort of line by line a single review that I've given. And I know it's one you and I are probably never going to agree on, which is okay.
That's fine. We're not meant to.
This way you get the benefit of all my words and not just 400 of them. But, you know, I think it's a really interesting topic. And it's one I actually have discussed a lot with many people on Twitter. You know, Aaron and I talk about it a lot as well. And I've talked to some of you guys about it on and off as well over time. But not as much as with some other reviewers online. You know, I think there's a little bit, for me, a little bit of a philosophical difference when it comes to reviews that I bring to it in particular. And I have talked about this quite a bit on Twitter. You know, and that's not to say that, like, for instance, you guys, your catchphrase is saving you from bad comics, which is great. I sort of don't think about writing about comics that way at all. My real push is more like advocating for what's good. And part of that comes from, you know, the sort of global picture and beyond formal reviewers. You know, my impression, and, you know, I've been on Twitter for probably about 3 years, I think. And after all that time, it's, you know, it's been, and, you know, DC Comics message boards long before that, you know, it became pretty obvious to me that the voice of the internet is so overwhelmingly negative. You know, Twitter message boards, I feel like what's wrong with comics this week is pretty well covered territory. And to some degree, I kind of see, and this is not just in what I write, I mean, it's sort of how I talk to people, I sort of like to balance that out a bit. You know, before joining Comicosity, before Aaron and I met, you know, I was, and I still do, a biweekly column for the Idler magazine. And, you know, their catchphrase really sort of encapsulates something about comics for me that really resonates. It's refusing to apologize for the things we enjoy. And the Idler, if you haven't been to it, idlermag.com, it's a website that has regular features, but not just, I'm the comics columnist, but there's food, movies, TV, books, video games, and all from a perspective, not necessarily the newest stuff. You know, all the, my sort of rule of thumb is I only write about stuff that's a year or more old. But really, like, talking about the good stuff out there and why it's good, why we love it. And, you know, the writing I've done for Comicosity, even before partnering with Aaron, is obviously a lot more day and date. What just came out this week? What do you got to say about it in, like, 400 to 500 words? But I still bring a little bit of that flavor to it. I'm not at all opposed to writing a bad review, and I've written a few, not very many, but I have written a few. But what I am kind of opposed to is going into the week knowing I'm only going to write 2 reviews. That's honestly all I've got time for. It's all I can really commit to doing really well. But going in and deciding, okay, I'm going to write about something I really love and something I really hated. And, you know, I've talked to a bunch of people about this, and some people do that to sort of create that sense of balance that Brett was talking about. But I just find that I just can't do it personally. I can't go in knowing that I'm looking for something to not like. It's definitely true that you know, I do generally review things I'm already purchasing. We do get free review copies of independent press material, but not, you know, the big two, not Marvel and DC. And so a lot of what I review is stuff I'm already predetermined to purchase. So, you know, the editing has already gone through a whole wave before that. Where you'll find some, you know, bad reviews or mediocre reviews for me are probably going to be books that I think, you know, we really should cover this. It's a kind of a big launch. You know, this, for instance, actually the day you guys recorded last time, I did a review for Bedlam. I wasn't overly thrilled with it. The art was gorgeous, obviously, but, you know, I thought this is a book that people are going to be talking about. You should probably, you know, take a look at it. So I gave it a shot. But again, like, you know, 400 to 500 words, I want to say something intelligent, and I want something that's going to give me something to be excited about. And that's not always the good book, but more often than not it is.
Okay. I'm just going to cut you off here. Cause you've made a lot of points, and we'll get back to you in a second. First off, I have to say for me, nobody has ever expected me to say anything intelligent, so I don't have that to worry. But and you know what? I think we did screw up. I'll say this a couple weeks ago, because we were consistently referring to Comicosity without even realizing it, because you're the site where most... I mean, for me, I don't really visit the other sites. I don't care about them. I care about Comicosity. Comicosity matters to me. because we have this affiliation with you and because you guys are good guys. So I want to see Comicosity improve. And because I go to Comicosity more than any other place, it's just where I kept on going back to. But you're right. And we wanted to give you, you've certainly earned the right to present your point of view. And always are welcome to do so on the show. I do know you just said, though, that you didn't give Bedlam, you didn't enjoy it that much. Did you give it a 6.5 or 7 out of 10? What was it?
7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. Now, that's a book you don't like that much.
And I love but the writing was pretty so-so.
Okay, so that's a book that you say you're not that high on, though, and you give it a 7 out of 10. And I say a book that I would give a 7 out of 10 to would be a book that I would consider to be very, very good. And I think that's kind of where we're missing it.
Well, that's interesting, because I have gone, and I sort of did a look out at the internet to see how grading scales are going, and I think you guys nailed it. I mean, when you went out there and you looked and saw people feeling like they give a 6 or a 7, that's a slightly negative review. I think you nailed it. I mean, for me personally, the reason why that is, let's say, a mediocre book, a 7 out of 10, is I just look at it as like the academic rating scale. So 10, you know, 9, 9.5, 10, those are A's. 8, 8.5, those are B's. 7 is like a C minus. It's pretty mediocre.
C minus student over here. It's. I was like,
He said pretty mediocre. Like I think he was clear up to that point.
Yeah. You know, I did talk.
Hey, I got a C, Brett.
Oh well, you know, you're Brett, a 7 out of 10.
Here break up the beer. I got a C.
But you know that really is a discrepancy, because there obviously is no standardized system, and every website does it differently. And in fact, I think most websites try to do it differently from each other, so nobody looks like they're sort of copying each other or whatnot. I mean, there are some sites who go even on a 10-point scale, and they'll end up giving a 6.78. I'm like, I don't even know how you got to that number. Like,
you graded it out of 1,000? Like that, it gives you 1,000 rating.
I give this book pie.
Right. Oh, now see, that's a challenge. I'm going to try to find a book I can give pie to.
Actually, you know what? That is a challenge, because right now the challenge is whether or not we have to stop the podcast so I can go eat some pie.
I hope it's a Three Stooges book.
Aww.
That might not earn a 3.14. I'm sorry. That's a immediate ring. No, I did look out there, and because I think the scale is a really interesting thing, and I asked at my local comic shop as well, and the manager does reviews weekly, short reviews, but she does them as well. And you know, I said, okay, so you know, how do you feel about the scale? And I started asking, like, where, you know, what would you say, where do you say things start to go off the rails? And almost the exact quote I got was, you know, 5 out of 10 is where crap starts. And it sort of falls into the grading scale, that, you know, the academic grading scale. So it's always sort of intuitively the way I've thought about it. Now, obviously, that goes off a little bit when you start going down to either 5-star ratings. You know, I really like, and we're trying a few different things at Comicosity, not on our main reviews, but on some special features. I like the sort of I don't want to say burn, that's pretty bad, but you know, like buy, borrow, give away, whatever. You know, I sort of like that because it's a little more nebulous. But you know, the problem is, no matter what you choose as your rating scale, it's always going to come under some amount of criticism, and that is a refrain that I've heard quite a lot. Incidentally, I also asked, you know, if you would give, let's say, Punk Rock Jesus a 10 out of 10, which many, many reviewers did. I've not read it. so I can't say. But a lot of reviewers have given that a 10 out of 10. What would you then give Watchmen? And honest to God, the response I got was, it wasn't even like a blank. It was like a 15.
Exactly.
And so, you know, there is a certain popular opinion at play here that I don't really know how you overcome that. You know, no matter how you feel, if 9 out of 10 people that come to your site understand that a 7 out of 10 is okay, how do you make a 7 out of 10 like awesome?
I think you do it with consistency. I think you do it with over time. I think you do it with simply by continuing to present that and trusting that the people are reading what you're writing as well, and that will come across.
Well, if 15 out of 10 people read your reviews, then you know they'll understand.
Well, we do have a lot to go on here, and we obviously wanted to talk about. I mean,
we're glossing over a subject here, though. You mean your comic? The person who fills your file will tell you you're buying crap. That makes no sense to me to have your manager actually give reviews of the comic books you're buying.
When I ran a store, I wouldn't have hired someone that wouldn't. That's how you get the trust of your customers, is by telling them this is just not good.
Well,
I'll sell it to you, but you're not going to be happy about it.
I can tell you, as a former owner, you had two different customers: those that were marks and those that you talked to. All right, Brett, we got quite a bit to discuss there, so let's actually go around the room and kind of get opinions on some of the things that Matt has brought up. And why don't we start with you? It's your turn. You have the floor. Go.
Woo! All right. Now, I think one of the things that does bother me is a numeric rating, because it really does force you to... It forces bad things, because the internet by itself has given us so much freedom to do stuff like this, so that when we put a number onto things, we can force it to do whatever we want it to do. Like you say, if a 10 for somebody else is a good comic and a 15 is the best comic, but for Mo, you know, a 10 is the best comic and a 7 is a good comic, a really good comic, then we are automatically forcing that on the rating system. And I think that there's just so many reasons why people want to give higher reviews, whether that's of, you know, personal opinion. I mean, it's like I said last time, nobody actually wants to do a bad review unless they're a troll who really is truly coming out and just wanting to say bad things about comic books to say bad things. I don't want to say bad things about comics. Sometimes the truth is just that it's just not a very good comic. I tend to subscribe to the same rating system that Mo does, so if it's a bad comic, then it can still be a 1. But that's why forcing the numbering system onto this seems kind of silly to me, because it's one of those cases where I'm better off, I think, being completely honest and saying, like, you know, hey, I like the art. I didn't like the writing. I didn't like this about the writing. I did like this about the art. And then just really ending it with, hey, would I go out there, spend my hard-earned money on this, and continuously buy it from a comic book store or from whatever? That's more of my review. The number at the end is just kind of a randomly generated thing. What I'm trying to get across is, would I keep buying this comic book? Yes, I would. No, no, I wouldn't.
Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I've always been opposed to any sort of actual system. I quite like how we do it and argue. And Matt brought up a really interesting point, I think, with he's only reviewing books he's already buying, which is something I actually never even considered about most reviewers on the net, that they're already predisposed to a positive review. Now, here on the podcast, we choose books by committee, so we're all forced to read things we normally wouldn't. And I'm actually surprised how many negative reviews I've given, because I don't like talking shit about a comic book. I like comic books in general. And I find week after week I'm giving more and more negative reviews. And that could be because I'm reading stuff I wouldn't normally read. I think it's an interesting point and really contextualizes the whole review process and how it actually becomes a part of the review itself.
Keith?
I think the grade inflation thing, as I had said in the last episode and Matt brought up, it's the academic approach of 50% and under is a fail, so everything else has to be on that sliding scale of like the other 50%, as opposed to it's not out of 100, it's out of 50. It's not out of 5 stars, it's out of 2.5 stars, really. I understand where you're going, Mo, that eventually you could train your reader to know what you mean. The reality, though, and I see this in reviews in my day-to-day, in my, my day job, if there was a reviewer that always gave 3 out of 5, except for like once a year gave 4 out of 5, you wouldn't say, okay, well, 3 out of 5 is their standard review. You would say, oh, they hate everything.
That depends. You know what, Keith, I got to say, I think if you're going to use a numerical system, that the person should be able to go to the bottom of that page, not read it, and go, I know whether or not they like this. And when I see a 7 out of 10, I don't really know in most situations. Like, I'll say, Matt, I know you gave Phantom Stranger 4 out of 10, so I know you hated that. What's that?
I love it. Yeah.
So I know you hated that. I know you gave Bedlam 7 out of 10, so I don't know what you think about that. And I know you gave Green Lantern 10 out of 10 issue recently, so I also know it's not as good as Mouse. So,
but here's the thing. You know, there's two things going on there about the comparison to Mouse. I don't think that it's not even about fairness. Like, I don't think it's appropriate to compare Green Lantern to Mouse. I think you can compare Joe Kubert's Yosel to Mouse. I think you can compare Black Hole to Mouse. I think you can compare a lot of things to Mouse. But that would sort of be like if you were a book reviewer and you had to review the latest, like, you know, how-to or DIY manual, and you said, well, it's not as good as Anna Karenina. I mean, they're just not the same. I mean, it's, you know, the comic book form is not, it's barely even a media anymore. It's almost more like a language. And you can't, not everything that's done in the same language is comparable. It's just not. You know.
I think it's a lot like saying, you know, is Jaws as good as Schindler's List?
No, it's better.
Better.
As I had said in the last episode, I think it's only fair to compare if you have to compare it, and I think you do have to compare it to something. I think you can only compare it to other things of the type. I mean, I would love it if I thought there was going to be any issue of Green Lantern that was as good as Mouse. I can't ever see that happen. But it could be one of the best superhero comics ever. It can be one of the best mainstream superhero comics. And I can compare it against other things of the like. Is Star Wars as good as The Godfather?
It's better.
Is Apocalypse Now better than The Matrix? I don't think in other... Yeah, I think, Matt's got a great example, but I don't think lumping all of them into one pile... I mean, ultimately, if you're going to have a numerical system that way, then what you actually have to have is a numerical system of one to as many comics as have ever been published. Because nothing's going to be exactly as good as something else. One's going to be slightly better or slightly worse. So you can't rate them out of 10. You have to rate them out of 1 to 150 million comics that have been published and put it on scale with Mouse as 150 million.
Exactly. So you made my point for me, Keith. Thanks for agreeing with me. What? You didn't? No. All right.
Matt had some there.
So debuting Monday, the new rating scale on Kamikaze will be 1 to 150 million.
Excellent.
and none of those can overlap. So we all have to talk to each other to figure out which number you're taking.
It's a good thing I'm a numbers guy.
This would be the biggest Excel document ever built.
And you guys thought the history of the DC Universe 3.0 was a big project.
Exactly. No, you know, the other thing that, and this is not something you brought up, or you know, but I think it's an interesting topic. The other thing when I'm reviewing that I try really hard not to do, and I probably have failed at times, but I try really hard not to review a book about what isn't in the book. You know, I try to only write about what is there, and that's something I do see in a lot of reviewers that. And I think Green Lantern number zero is a very good example of that. A lot of reviews I read, you know, had a lot to say about why this character versus, so why an, you know, Arab American man as opposed to a woman, why an earthling instead of someone else, why this, why that. Well, the bottom line is, it is, like, that was the choice that was made. And I can come up with a million reasons, and I've got a few good ones, but... You know, writing about that in a review, I think is an issue. I mean, you're talking about what's not there as opposed to what is.
Well, I think people also.
It'd be like reviewing Indiana Jones based on how much better Tom Selleck would have been. it isn't really got anything to do with what you're reviewing. Go ahead, Brett.
Well, I also think that, you know, it's when you talk about what's not in the review. Or in the book, but people also struggle with what is in the book because they give too much of what's in the book away. So, I mean, we're butting heads in that regard too. I mean, if you try, because there's lots of reviews out there that are just jam packed with the entire plot of the book.
Yeah, I kind of enjoy the ones that have more words in the review than in the book.
Yeah,
that's
always
my favorite thing.
I read a review recently where they didn't have a rating scale, and he didn't give away too much. But I knew by the end of that, by the end of reading the review, that he enjoyed the book, and it forced me to read it. And you know, I mean, really, reading a review, even a one-page review, only takes about 2 or 3 minutes, anyways. So, I mean, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, really, are we reaching the point where we're arguing that we don't actually need numerical reviews? Like, what do numerical reviews give us anymore in this day and age?
Other than confusion.
I mean, I think that's a good point. And I am not, like, the biggest advocate for the numerical system. You know, I think if I'm going to use it, I want people to understand how I'm using it and where my rationale is coming from. But if tomorrow Aaron and I... you know, decide to pull the trigger and come up with some other system, then I would be totally fine with that.
And at what point in time, Matt, though, are people supposed to understand how you want them to understand how you're using it, but how is how you're using it different than how Aaron's using it or somebody else or how Brett's using it? I mean, Brett certainly uses it, and he reviews on the same site very differently.
Possibly. You know, I mean, you'd be surprised, actually, that the spread between my reviews and Brett's reviews numerically is not that different.
No, and sorry, I'm just going to break in just quickly with this. And the primary reason, and I think for me it comes down to, oftentimes with the worst comics, because I like to try to read a lot of the freebie comics because it introduces me to stuff that I wouldn't normally read. And to me, that's one of the joys of comic books. But I think one of the reasons is because when I come across a bad comic, oftentimes I just don't have enough to say about it to fill even 300 words. And so That's why there isn't that much of a discrepancy.
Exactly. And, you know, the format you guys have on this show is very, very different. And I think it's very advantageous in that regard, to have something where you're forced to read a certain book. You don't have to, like, you know, come up with 400 words or 300 words, you know, that someone's going to want to read about it. You can just talk about it and be honest, and it all sort of comes out in the wash, especially since you've got four guys who have very different tastes. And for the listener, you know, I listen, and generally I agree with about two of you. And not always the same two, but, you know, but I do get, like, a nice cross-section from that. But it is true. It's really hard to write about something you just... I mean, there are a lot of books that I'm just like, you know, it's not, you know, structurally bad. It's not the worst dialogue I've ever read. But I just don't have a whole lot to say. But, you know, by the same token, I was saying this earlier before we were recording, you know, I read Underwater Welder, which I think is safe to say probably one of the best graphic novels of the year, if not the best. Very well reviewed. Aaron reviewed it for Comicosity, gave it a 10 out of 10. I've read it. I really liked it. I don't know that I have much to say about it, though. And it could just be because maybe it's not hitting me quite yet, or maybe it's something that's going to be a slow burn. But, you know, I don't think I could come up with 400 words about that book. And I probably would give it a 10 out of 10, maybe, you know, maybe 9.5, whatever. But so it's not always the bad books that I don't have something to say about. But I will say it's a lot harder to get excited about a book that you're not excited about.
What's wrong then with, you know what? What's wrong then with writing a one-page thing and having one list of short reviews that's, say you have 10 one-paragraph reviews, and then longer reviews for those which you have to see, and that way your opinion goes out everywhere?
Well, interestingly enough, Mo, now that you mention it, but Comicosity will be debuting something like that in November.
Oh.
So that has been in the works for quite a while. We have a new... and I won't reveal more than that because I want to maintain suspense. But we do have a new reviewer coming in to do just what you say, and it is not a point system. So that's a little experiment we're trying out, and you know, certainly we would be open to more things like that going forward.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about something else then that you mentioned that you enjoy. You want people to read what's good, so you talk about it. Chris, let me get your thoughts on that idea.
Great, you woke him up.
No, I'm just trying to understand the question. Read what's good.
Matt, why don't you pose the question to Chris as you would.
So let me just recontextualize it. You know.
Yeah, please.
Basically, there's no shortage of people online that are going to tell you what's bad in a given week, but it's a lot harder to find the people who are going to tell you what's good. And so part of what I do, and this is not just writing for Comicosity, but it's the whole core of my column for The Idler and really how I try to talk on Twitter. You know, I try to talk up what's good. I certainly have no problem. Someone asks me, hey, what did you think of Madam X number one? And I will tell them what I thought of it. But am I going to go out of my way to talk smack about a book? Probably not.
Yeah, no, I do understand that. That, I mean, my solo podcast was all about selling crap that I like. But once you call it a review, I think you have a responsibility to present both the positive and the negative aspects of any given product.
Individually, I agree. I think that's part of being honest. I absolutely agree. But I guess the question for me is, to what degree do you need to present that globally amongst your reviews? And I don't know the answer to that. I know that I have I absolutely believe as a reviewer I have to have the willingness to write a bad review, but I don't necessarily feel like I have to make myself do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you don't want to be a troll, but at the same time, if you're always pumping sunshine up my ass, I'm going to stop listening. Or reading. Listening to what you have to say. I don't have the answer either. I just think even asking the question on a regular basis is what you need to do to keep some sense of reality in your reviews.
Keith, you have a point there.
I knew a theater reviewer who once called up a theater and said, "Thank you very much for having me at the show. I wrote my review because I like you. I'm not going to run it." It was he had written it and then felt that it was just that his honest reaction would be so detrimental to everyone that it was better off that it just didn't exist. And I think that there is a level of that. I mean, one of the reasons that that Matt and I became friends on Twitter is that there is so much negative out there, and this gets outside of just peer reviews. I think what Matt's talking about is just a general attitude. I saw a friend on Twitter today who said that he just caught up on the Walking Dead TV series, and it's even worse than last season. And I'm like, even worse? So it's not just it's gotten bad. It's gotten bad would be fine if you said that. But what you've said is it was bad last year when you watched 12 episodes. And now you've spent 5 more hours of your life on something that you're not enjoying.
Well,
there's a point where you've actually set out to not like something now.
I'll tell you, that's a little bit better for me than someone who would come in and say, "I can't believe how terrible Walking Dead is. I haven't watched it since last season." that I see a lot of.
I'm gonna throw out somebody that I'll never forget. This is many years ago, but I will never forget this. Picking up a newspaper with the Calgary Herald here and reading a review for Die Hard 2. This is many, many years ago when it was out in the theater. And this reviewer slammed the hell out of this. This was bad. This was bad. This is horrible. This was bad. And he just picked this movie apart and pulled every part of it out from its... Just... I've never read somebody slam a book like or a movie like this. Then I get to the end, the rating. 3.5 out of 5.
Oh, I've seen that too. You know, I was listening, and I'm not going to name any names, but I was listening to a podcast and going around about a particular project, and they said, "Oh, what letter grade would you give this?" Like an A, A minus, B plus, A. And then it was a half hour of slamming the hell out of it. And I'm just like, well, okay. Like, there's a little bit of disconnect there for me. I mean, I truly don't think we should be blowing sunshine up anyone's ass, but you know, I think there's a way to praise things without being like gushy. I think it lies in being critical, and not critical mean, but critical, just a critical thinker.
I think Matt, I hope you'll agree with this, and any listeners will, that when they listen to us, that they're getting an honest opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
If we love it, we love it. If we hate it, we hate it.
Yeah, I don't
We don't slam something and then give it a good rating.
Yeah, well, and I would hope that that the content of my reviews match the scores that I give them in honesty, if not balance.
Now, Brett, I know you're the one who actually brought this subject up in the first place about reviewers and negativity and too much positive reviews. This all started, basically, Matt, what I'm saying, I'm pointing the finger at that asshole over there. Brett, you got to respond to the negativity thing, positivity, too much, too little.
Well, I think something. The only thing that I'm finding a disconnect in what we talk about is, as we went through some of the other sites and we talked about you know, so many of the reviews being overly positive. So I don't, it's like that separation of reviews versus how you speak about something to on Twitter, you know, because the reviews that I tend to see are almost overwhelmingly positive. And I mean, that seems to be on a lot of sites. When the person talks about that online, that's kind of where I absolutely agree. I'm not trying to sell a comic book to somebody that's not very good. I'm not talking about that comic. If I love a comic, I'm absolutely gonna hype the crap out of it, because it's just like, yeah, I want you to read this comic. I think it's great. But it's a separation from the review. I mean, we as comic book fans, I think, are always going to have our geek moments. We're always going to have these moments, and it's like I prefaced when I talked to Bill Willingham. You know, I love Fables. Love it to death. And when I first met Terry Moore, and I know Mo and Keith can attest to this, I was just the biggest damn dork you ever would see, because it was just like but
more so than usual, even.
Yes, but it's just because I think we are prone to those moments, and so it's like reviewing has to be separated from those, in my opinion.
Now, I just want to say I went into one website because I was trying to find some context for this to be able to talk to you about it, and because I do know that, I mean, I could see in you're giving positive reviews regularly, and like you say, you're not the only one. So I went into another site, and I looked at one reviewer. I went to one particular reviewer. I looked at his last 20 reviews. He had 17 positive reviews. 10 of those were extremely positive. At some point in time, if I'm reading this guy, I don't know when or where I'm trusting him or what he's giving me that's new, especially if he's reviewing the same series consistently. Is there any book, Matt, that you – how many months now have you been reviewing for Comicosity?
That's a good question. Probably, I want to say 4, maybe.
Okay. So any book that you reviewed every single month?
No, and I make a point not to review, I try not to review books 2 months in a row. There have been books I've reviewed more. I did review Phantom Stranger 2 months in a row because I felt like issue 1 was significantly different than issue 0, and I wanted to call attention to that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, no. I make a point to try not to review the same book 2 months in a row.
Now, if I say to you, though, somebody gives 17 out of 20 positive reviews and 50% of those, 10 out of 20, extremely positive reviews, you think that's a good thing? I mean, what goes into your head on that?
I don't think it's a bad thing, necessarily. I mean, I'll be honest, part of my day-to-day business is understanding a truism, is that, you know, even bad publicity is good publicity. So giving a bad review to something isn't really the worst thing you can do. The worst thing you can do is not talk about it at all. And I'm not saying that's my mission either. I'm not out to squelch books or whatever by, you know, ignoring them. But, you know, I don't necessarily feel as strongly about having to imagine your particular reviewer by both what they like and what they hate or don't like. I mean, it's a messy about hate. I do think Chris made a really interesting point the other day about making a connection with the reviewer and getting to know them, and that's actually something, as I get a little more into the woodwork at Comicosity, and not so just overwhelmed by the new responsibility, that I do want to sort of see how to make it happen, so you know who's reviewing what up front before you even click on it, because I think that's a really valuable thing, and there are other sites that do that. But what I will say is that I do like that we don't put the score out in the front.
I think when I see a guy who's given 17 out of 20 reviews that are that positive, I do think it's a bad thing, because at some point in time, I'm just not going to be interested in reading them. I'm going to go, oh, another review from this guy, and I'm not even going to go in there and read it, because I'm going to say, oh, another positive review. This guy isn't critical. And if he's not critical, I can't trust him telling me whether or not I should invest my money in this. You say you want to promote what's bad, but I don't know if you're or promote what's good. But I don't think you can just promote what's good without giving people the feeling that you are. Well, let's talk about this. Wasn't Aaron accused of being a Marvel's back pocket?
When was that?
Brett?
That was it was a little while ago with one of the AVX reviews that he gave. Well, because he was giving high reviews to all the AVX, and I know he really likes them. And somebody came up, and the guy was not a qualified person to really write about anything. But yeah, he accused Aaron of being in Marvel's back pocket. This is why it came up for me.
But I'm not saying that he is. Obviously, he's not. Yeah. And I'm not saying he didn't really enjoy those books. But I am saying that because the guy doesn't believe he's critical, all of a sudden his reviews become less effective, and you've opened yourself up to be accused of something like that. When you just want to promote what's positive out there. And if I don't really find the internet as negative as you do. I think it's a wonderful... I don't.
Tony F. and Harris, anyone?
No, but here's... Pumpkin is all I can say.
No, but I don't. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. I don't find it as negative as you, as I find it a reflection of where society is in general today. Now, if you're going to say that's a negative, that's fine. But I just think that's part of the evolution of humanity and our how we are as a species and a culture and society within North America, certainly. So I don't look at it as a negative. I view it as a mirror. And if this is how we are, then it's something we need to work on. But I don't think that's a negative. That's just accurate to me.
Well, I will say that I agree with you that it is a reflection of the greater culture. There's no question about that. The question is, you know, do I want to affect any change in that way? And the answer to that is also yes. You know, I want to contribute my part to make it not quite so negative. But truly, like, I don't go into picking books and thinking, what can I be super positive about this week? You know, when I read a ton of books, I probably read like 15, 16 a week. You know, I look to see what do I have a lot to say about. And, you know, unfortunately, most of the time that's stuff that I'm really enjoying. But again, I'm pre-selected.
But again, and we'll use you as an example because you brought yourself up.
Yeah,
you're here, absolutely. And you know you could take me in a fight if you had to. So that's not,
you could. Please.
You're primarily, though, review a few of those smaller books and a few of but you don't really seem to me to review any Marvel. I don't see many Marvel reviews from you. Why is that?
Because I don't read a lot of Marvel. However, you will notice that I'll be reviewing a bunch of Marvel Now books, including one that will, by the time this podcast hits, be on deck for All New X-Men number one.
But prior to this, though, you weren't. So again, doesn't it again become, if you're only reviewing one company, again, isn't that where you open yourself up to again to be accused of being a shill for a company? Isn't that in order to give yourself legitimacy, don't you have to open up yourself to the positive, to the negative, to all the companies, to everything? You talk about, you say you want to affect a positive change, but I don't think being honest ever, under any circumstance, being 100% honest, even if it's negative, is a negative thing. I think honesty is what we need. I think that's the key to the start to everything.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. And I do, believe me, every time I write a review, the key for me is being honest. And again, not necessarily balanced, but definitely honest. The problem, though, that I find is that if, you know, I can pick out any number of books that I'm not interested in necessarily, like just not that I wouldn't be interested in, but that I don't buy regularly. Like, for instance, a lot of Marvel books. There's a strong possibility that I'm not going to like a book because it's just not something I'm going to like, and it's not written for me. And I do have to sort of recognize that, like, I don't have to like every book out there, but there's sometimes it's not that the book is bad. It's that it's just not for me.
But here's the thing. You're a reviewer. Are we reviewing for you?
I don't know how to write about a book without, you know, infusing some of my own enjoyment in it.
Some, but all?
What's the option, though, Mo? I mean, from what you're saying, the only option is to read every book that comes out.
No, it's not. And,
but I mean, what it, as we said at the top, I mean, Matt's out of pocket for anything outside of a few independents. So from what you're saying, he should grab a couple of random books and review them to balance off books that
yes.
he has some interest in?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say you should just pick up the occasional Marvel book, the occasional Image book, the occasional whatever that you're not reading, and give it a try. As a, I think, and that's just constructive criticism, in my opinion, that will improve how people view you as a reviewer, even if you say you don't like it. I think that will actually strengthen people's opinion of you, make yourself and Comicosity stronger.
Well, and I think you have a fair point there. And believe me, there is definitely a shift from being a reviewer, occasional columnist, to being a partner in a site like that. And as a partner, I do feel an obligation to put in think a little more strategically about what we're reviewing and put myself in that place. You know, part of the reason why I reviewed so many DC books when I first came to Comicosity is because there were barely any reviewed at all. So, like, Aaron was the Marvel guy. Keith, you and Brett, you reviewed a lot of indies. And maybe an occasional DC, maybe an occasional Marvel, but those things were well covered. But what wasn't being covered were the DC books as much. But I am starting to make that transition, and I do think it's a very fair point.
No, that's fair, and I know that was a specific request of Aaron's because Aaron's not a DC guy, and he had no interest in trying to learn the context to review a DC.
Ah, okay. I call him the classiest man, but I think we understand now. This entire problem's Aaron. Solved!
Oh, great. Now we have to have Aaron on to start talking about him when he's not here. Never ending
cycle.
Now we
got the root of the problem. You know what? We've gone on for quite a while here. I'm going to let... I've talked plenty. I think everybody knows what I'm saying. So I'm done. I'm just going to say I'm Mo, M-O, We Talk Podcast, Mo _We Talk on Twitter. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you for checking out Keith's new blog because it's awesome. And Joel Mulvey's got a new show coming up here. I'll be getting to editing pretty soon. It's incredible. And latest Longbox Graveyard was great. And Comic Podcast Network also has some good comic book-related podcasts you guys can check out there. And other than that, final thoughts, Brett. Anything left that you need to get off your chest regarding this topic? Because we're never talking about it again until Aaron comes on. And anything else? Brett, it's your turn.
I mean, I actually don't have very much left to say. I feel like we're at this point, we're just beating it to death. I mean, I like reviewing comics because it's given me the chance to read things that... that maybe I wouldn't normally want to pick up, but I completely understand the concept that as not a partner in Comicosity, I don't have the same thought process, but I guess I try to have an open mind when I actually have the time to review.
Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah. No,
and by the way, before that, Brett, Brett, at We Talk Podcast, Brett_WeTalk, Twitter. Chris?
I think these two shows have really enlightened me that I'm not just talking with my buddies, because that is sort of what I brought to the reviews before, is that we were just throwing books in that we weren't necessarily... We wouldn't have talked to them naturally, but when we got to it, we just started talking about them. And I never really considered the responsibilities of a reviewer. It's something I'm going to take into more of a count in the future. I'm Chris underscore We Talk on Twitter, Chris at WeTalkPodcasts.com. And Keith, why don't you give your plugs?
Well, I think I've talked my my butt off in this conversation, this topic. I actually am glad that we on the podcast have come to review just based on would you recommend this and are you interested in the next issue? I think for a serialized medium, are you interested in the next issue is one of the best things you can talk about when you review a book. I mean, Underwater Welder will fail in that for you, Matt, because it's probably okay that you're not waiting on the next issue. Keith at WeTalkPodcast.com to email me, CubReporterK on Twitter, and the second installment of my 900 Things blog went live on the weekend. I have so far successfully gotten rid of 10 things out of 900.
890 to go. Almost there.
But several hundred are piled in a corner, and my cat was playing with them through most of the recording of this episode, so I really want them to go away.
There you go. And thank you again very much, Matt, for joining us. We're going to go OUT by giving you the floor to plug, get off your chest, whatever. Your turn, my friend.
All right. Well, I have to say, first off, that I am very surprised to see that not only are the four of you guys some of the most pleasant people to listen to on a podcast, but you're also darn attractive, and that I probably would have guessed. But no, really, thank you.
Even Keith?
Yeah, even Keith. Aw, blah, blah. No, really, thank you so much for having me on. This is a ton of fun. This is definitely, you totally popped my podcast cherry, and it was a real honor. You know, I do want to give a big shout-out to Aaron Long, Juice005 on Twitter. You know, Aaron is the best partner a guy can have. He works his butt off for Comic-Con.
Don't tell your husband that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He is a big Aaron fan as well. But no, he works his butt off for the site. I'm truly truly blessed to be able to work with him. And but if anyone wants to contact me, of course you can contact me through the site. There's a contact us. I won't give my email because it's horribly long. But you can find me on Twitter, Photocub, FOTOCUB, and I am always up for talk. I will reply to anyone who says anything to me, so, give me a shout-out.